This is the Passive Real Estate Strategies Podcast, where our goal is to educate you about the ways to create passive wealth through real estate methods that do not require your time. I'm your host, Justin Moy with President's Club Investors. Let's get right into the show.
Hey, investors. Thanks for joining us on another episode of Passive Real Estate Strategies. Today, I'm sitting down with Ronnie. Now, Ronnie is a passive investing rock star. We're talking before the show. I mean, he's got such a wealth of knowledge, both active, passive, with his own portfolio. I mean, he's placed over seven figures worth in LP sides of deals and just a wealth of knowledge. So I knew I had to have him on the show right when I met this guy. So Ronnie, man, thanks so much for coming on and sharing your knowledge.
Hey, Justin, thanks for having me, man. Appreciate it.
Hey, so tell us about your journey with real estate. So, you know, it's somewhat rare, whether for good or bad, that people jump straight into passive investments. Sometimes there's a buildup, there's some single family homes, there's accidental landlording, maybe they're active. Yeah. You know, tell us what your journey was to get to where you are now, being a full-time passive investor.
Yeah, for sure. So I started like a lot of people. I started in corporate America. I had the usual track of, you know, being a new hire, moving up. I worked for a large corporation and consumer product goods. Mm-hmm. While I was making money, you know, and trying to create this nest egg, I found that there just had to be a different way, right? And yeah. A lot of times real estate is by chance. And for me, it was somebody by chance at my gym. And so it so happened that she was a real estate agent who also did property management. And she's like, look, this is what I do. And I learned a little bit about the craft, and this was around single family homes. So I lived in the Midwest, and I started buying single family homes with her. And so my whole goal was I'm going to retire with, you know, a corporate America job and have single family homes on the side with me and my wife. And I did build that up. So we built it up to a portfolio of 10 single family homes.
Okay.
But then we also knew that multifamily was really where tremendous wealth was made. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, look, we're going to figure out, is there a different path here on multifamily and how is the best approach to that? You know, so as much as single family was great, it's slow. It's a slow burn. You're buying them individually, you know, and it's individual doors and the scale comes with multifamily. So we pivoted into multifamily. We had moved from the Midwest to Southern California. And I went to a local meetup where somebody was speaking on having their own 20, 30 units in this, you know, in a Southwest market. Yeah. And so that led into a conversation with him. And I still stayed at my job, but my wife ended up leaving her corporate job and partnering with him. And so there started our passive investing journey. We started placing money. We started buying, you know, projects, you know, and then over time that became so attractive. We actually ended up becoming an active investor for about a year.
Okay.
And that's where we invested, you know, even though we were sponsoring deals, we were investing our own money in these deals as well as other people's deals.
Yeah.
And we saw just the benefit of being a passive investor, having cash flow come in and creating, you know, this stream of income outside of being, you know, working day to day on it. Right. And so that's how we ended up going into it. Long story short. And today I've stepped away from the day to day. I'm now a fully passive investor. We replaced our income and then some with just our LP deals, as well as some of our single family homes we've kept as well.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I mean, I think that's the big dream is what you just said, you know, we replaced our income and then some with our passive income and our passive deals. So, you know, tell us about that, those LP deals that you were doing. It sounds like they were apartment buildings, multifamily. Is that what you've invested in entirely? Have you done other asset classes or will you do other asset classes in the future?
It's a great question. I think, you learn as you go, right? And so our initial LP deals, the majority of our LP investments have all been in multifamily. Our diversification has come from different markets. And so we've invested in different growth markets. A lot of it's in the Southwest, Arizona, and Texas. We also have some deals in Florida and North Carolina as well.
Yeah.
A lot of those deals, frankly, came with great structure in regards to, you know, how those deals were put together. So frankly, a lot of them were purchased in 2021, you know, early 2022. A lot of them have fixed rate debt, you know, so a time when frankly the market was a little less frothy. And so the income is a bit more stable as the financials have come in. And frankly, they've had more time to mature, right? So as the value add has been put in, as the rents have been realized, we've seen just this steady stream come in from all these individual deals. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, most of it's been in multifamily. We also invest a little bit now because the interest rates are higher in short-term debt. And so that interest does help us as well. So our three big streams of income are, we've got probably, I probably 20 LP deals that we've invested in.
Wow.
We've got a portfolio of single family homes and we've got short-term debt. So that combination of three income sources is what gives us our household income.
Yeah. And so when you say short-term debt, you're doing like a debt fund.
Pretty much. Yes.
Okay. Got it. Yeah. So anybody who doesn't know, you know, you can invest as equity or as debt, right? And so the debt fund, typically you have a fixed interest rate, maybe it's 10%. A lot of home flippers use those types of things. They'll take a 10% loan for maybe a year and then pay you monthly as it goes. Typically, the upside usually is capped, right? Because you're kind of fixed at that 10%. And if they do really well, you kind of stay there. But again, if they don't do as well as they thought, you still get your fixed rate. So it's a great way to diversify. And so I like what you said too about you diversify through region. So there's a few ways to diversify, especially as an LP, because you don't need to be established in certain areas. You don't need to have intimate market knowledge as much as the operators, but you can divest with location, with asset class, with long versus short-term strategies, with class A, class C. So there's a lot of different ways you can get into that as well without pushing out of your comfort zone, if your comfort zone is multifamily or self-storage or something like that. So I love the strategy there. So of your LP deals, you know, how do you see investing different today? Like, are you placing a lot of LP cash today versus when you first started out? I mean, markets have changed quite a bit. People are now, you know, deals are getting a little bit stretched. A lot of deals are coming off the market or deal volume is down. You know, how have things changed from, like, I think you said early 2021 is when you made most of your investments?
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. How have things changed from, you know, really just a few years
in
investing strategy?
Yeah, the landscape has changed dramatically, right? Obviously, and deals are harder to find, they're harder to pencil, they're harder to make work. And I think there's a couple of things. I still believe that there is no bad time to start in real estate. I think that's absolutely true, because just because the headlines say that, hey, you know, you're going to see assets coming down in value or whatever it is, there's always opportunity if you can find it. Now, we have the luxury of having experience, right? So I think that's fair. But what I look for are experienced sponsors who have exited deals, who've had a bit of a track record in operating in tougher times, not just the ones that are, you know, on the growth side, and the structure of the deals. So I look for fixed rate debt in terms of deals. And the sponsors that win those type of deals are the ones who, it's usually off market. It's usually, you know, something that is, they're harder to find and they're harder to win. And so the sponsors that win them and have it right are the ones that I would believe in. Mm-hmm. And then secondly, can they get to the true, how much value add is there, right? And so aggressive value add is a bit more challenging right now because of cost of labor, cost of materials, and also saturation of market in regards to renters, right? So thinking about some of those things. And so it's the reason why I stick with multifamily is because I know it, right? Yeah. And so there's a lot of different variables, self-storage, you know, commercial in terms of development, right? And stuff like that. But I, like I said, I can diversify across those different things, and I can understand the debt structured associated with specifically multifamily.
Yeah. How have you seen that value add play change? Because I think a lot of the value add play was because money was free, right? So I'll take out $3 million extra bucks to fix this place up. And renters were also getting free money. I mean, there was COVID money running rampant. And I think a lot of multifamily operators, you know, they see that downtick now versus when other people were seeing their downtick during COVID, because a lot of that COVID money dried up. Yeah. Are you seeing still the same strategies being employed? Is it still that value add strategy? Or are they saying, hey, we're doing fixed rate debt, you're not going to hit a 20 IRR, we're going to give you a 15, but we're going to cash flow you for 5 years, we'll fix as we go. And then by the time 5 years passes, our cash on cash now is in the double digits, and we're kind of keep growing that. You know, how have you seen that plan change?
Yeah, I think definitely expectations are tempered, right? So to be honest, you're absolutely right. You saw 15 to 18 IRRs. Now you're seeing 13 IRRs probably, you know, and then some. And frankly, some people are questioning, you know, like I can get a 4 or 5% interest from the bank, you know, from the Fed these days versus cash flow in some of these markets are 5, right? And how secure is that 5? And so you're looking for more, but it can be tough, right? And so I think that the value add, so number one on the cash flow, it's a balance, right? Some people say, I'm just going to take my money, then put it in the bank and call it a day during this time frame. And I've definitely seen that play out. On the other side, it's also when people are scared when there's opportunity, right? And so we've seen that price per units, there has been opportunity that I've seen from some sponsors that there can it can still come down a bit and still make stuff work. And so the ones that I believe are the ones that have properties that are close. Mm-hmm. And so they have experience with deals that are down the street. I own this property. I've bumped the rents up $200 to $300. Because even that the blanket market isn't seeing major growth, you know, real estate is a buy street business, right? And so if you can still find opportunity and still find ways to create value, then I still think there's room for value add. It's not like, to your point, the days of free money and everyone has money to spend on rent. But if you create a good product, you know, it's people are still going to come. I'll give you an example. There's an LP deal I invested in late 2022. And it was in a townhome community. And it was initially low income, but as that expired, their rents went from like $1,300. And then they renovated it like crazy. And the rents went up to like $2,200.
Wow.
And every single one rented out, and there was a wait list every single time they put a unit out. Wow. And so rents went up to $2,400, and there's still a wait list. And so, but it's because it's a 3-bedroom townhome in a great area, right?
Yeah.
And so like the market would tell you that's not doable, but when you create really good product in a great community, there's still demand if you understand the market well enough.
Yeah.
If you want to replace your income with passive income, then head to the show notes and download our free Retire Within 10 bundle. And this includes tons of resources that will help you strategize replacing your income with passive income. This is by far the most valuable download I've seen in our industry, and it's something we are super proud of. Head to the show notes and download that now.
And that is that a popular strategy you've seen? Because that is a common thing that people will do is they'll burn off kind of the restrictions for tax benefits, right? So anybody listening, you might buy a building and the city, the Fed will give you huge tax breaks to say, hey, can you make this low income housing?
Yeah.
Your tenants cannot make above, let's say, 50% of the average income in a household. You say yes, and in exchange for the lost income, you get these huge tax breaks. And those have a life to them. Maybe let's call them 5 years.
Yeah.
And as that third, fourth year comes, right, you sell it off to somebody like your group who says, man, market rate should be this. We're going to burn off those tax benefits and then push rents up. Is that a strategy that you like, or was that kind of a one-off deal that you did?
I think every single property has its own unique solution. And so that was a unique solution where it didn't pencil unless that play was built in.
Yeah.
I feel like it's something that's more rare. I've seen it less because I think it's challenging to pull off.
Yeah.
It was a unique thing where after a 20-year restriction expired, it was a unique opportunity to take that down, right? And so that's what the group did. I've also seen it in Texas where we actually took a regular C-class property and actually put it on low-income housing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, wow, why would you do that, right? Because you were rent restricted. Well, as a result, the state waived property taxes.
Yeah, especially in Texas is huge. I mean, those
it's
are creeping
huge,
up.
Right? And it's like we fight property taxes and it's such a huge expense item. And so the rents were not that far off of where they currently were at, but because we turned into low-income housing, like that's, you know, to waive property taxes was a massive benefit to investors. Yeah. So that's all about creative solutions for different properties. You know?
Yeah. And we're seeing more of that too, where they're actually converting to low income housing. And part of it is for the tax benefits, yes, but also part of it is that's just an enormous need.
Right. Absolutely. Need.
You're going to have zero vacancies. I mean, it's just every city, every big town needs those things. So yeah, I love what you said. Every property has its unique strategy. So sometimes it's not just plug and play. Although some people do that. There's some good, great groups out there that say every single time we only buy these types of buildings and we will do this exact strategy and yeah, we'll exit this way. And we've done it 15 times in the past, 5 years. And you're like, okay, that's fantastic too, that you have that, that down and you could do that.
Absolutely.
That's really good. So how are you seeing markets? So you guys are in a lot of the growth markets, the Phoenix, the Texas, some of the Carolinas, Floridas. And as those markets keep getting hot, and they keep growing, prices increase, right? And as prices increase, sometimes that sucks yield out and you're kind of hoping that the demand keeps outpacing supply. Then a lot of these markets are getting new supply, big new supply. Phoenix is the number one for build to rent.
Absolutely.
So if you are starting out today and you have no LP deals, but you have all the knowledge you have, are you still looking in those big growth markets or are you looking a little bit elsewhere? Do you think those markets are kind of already played out? If it's the hot thing, right, it's almost, you're almost catching it at a high point of the wave.
Yeah.
Or do you still feel, yes, I would start out if I was starting from nothing, I'd still look in those growth markets?
It's a great question. And I think it depends on where you personally are at. And so what are you investing for? And so some people are still investing for growth, right? They want to grow their wealth above and beyond cash flow, right? So if you're looking to grow above and beyond cash flow, I still think growth markets have room for you to exponentially grow your wealth. You can double your wealth in 5 years. I think that those numbers are a bit tighter now, but I think that growth markets still make sense. If you're looking for just simply cash flow, like I've made my money, I'm close to retiring, I'm looking to replace my income and do it in a very, in a more substantial way, and that multiplier isn't as important, I would consider things like the Midwest. I've had my single family homes are mostly in the Midwest, and I've seen deals in the Midwest and the price per door is a lot lower.
Yeah.
And so as a result, the cash flow can be a lot higher. So I would consider markets like that. Yeah. But I think it depends on where you're at. And the reason why I've invested in the growth markets is frankly, we wanted both, right?
Yeah.
There's still cash flow to be made, 5 to 7%. A lot of my IP deals probably cash flow 8% these days because they've matured, right? And then, I've had deals, and then I had my first LP deal was one where we invested a good amount of our money and it was a 3x multiple in like 18 months. It was ridiculous, right? And so but that's, and that's what we wanted. We wanted the cash flow and we wanted the appreciation of the market, right? And so unless you feel like, hey, people just aren't going to move anymore and there's no job creation, then I still feel like the growth markets still have an absolute role to play in people's portfolio.
Awesome. Yeah, that's phenomenal advice. So, what are some of the things you're looking at now? And we talked about some things you look for in sponsor teams. Okay, track record. Have you worked in down markets? Have you done this type of business plan before? What are some things you look for to tell you that this deal or this sponsor maybe isn't for you? You touched a little bit on debt, and anybody who listens to the show not knows I talk about debt all the time. Debt to me is really the number one killer of deals and for sales. And you're seeing people get foreclosed now because their debts are getting out of control. So you look at the debt, that's one big thing. What are some other things you're going to look at that might tell you, hey, this maybe isn't the best deal
for guys? I think vetting the sponsor is hugely important. I think betting on the jockey is really important. I've seen too many sponsors who don't do it full time. They do it as a side gig, frankly.
Yeah.
A lot of people have come in like that. And frankly, I did that early on. And so I understand that piece, but I want dedicated teams. I want dedicated asset managers. I want dedicated talent that can, during tough times, you're not being pulled in too many different directions, right? And so I want resources on the ground. Mm-hmm. I do look for, is the sponsor going to put some skin in the game, right? Mm-hmm. And so what does that look like in regards to, hey, they can't just walk away and have no repercussion, right?
Yeah. So what does that look like? Does that mean dollars invested?
It's a bit of both. And so that's talent. So do you have full-time talent and a team, right? Mm-hmm. So do you have, frankly, do you have a construction team, right? Do you have in-house property management? That's not 100% needed because that can be, either a benefit or a curse, right?
Yeah.
But do you have full control of the property versus are you just letting it ride the market, right? So that's kind of how I think about that. And then, yeah, there are dollars in the property, right? And so are you putting your own money into the deal alongside me, or are you just hoping that I come up with all the capital as an LP, right? And so I would like to see some skin in the game and some dollars invested from the GP side.
Yeah. How can you vet how well they control the property, especially before you've invested, right? I think that's a tough thing.
Great question.
Especially a lot of people now, they have strong track records, because to your point, you know, part of it is the market took you up. Maybe they did really well. I don't want to discount anybody's work and hard work, even in acquisitions and management. But how do you vet? Like, are there specific questions you ask? Are there specific things that you are looking for to see how they actually operate and manage an asset?
Yeah, great question. I mean, I want to hear your three worst horror stories, right? Mm-hmm. Your horror stories regarding, you know, when your vacancy went, you know, dramatically up, and you, mm-hmm. how did you manage through that, right? What was the game plan, right? Did a city throw you a curveball when you were trying to do value add, permits went sideways? How did you solve for that, right? Like, I want to hear, like, when something went really bad and how you fixed it. I don't want to hear that, hey, we just a lot of people just rode the market, to your point, and valuations just went up, right? That's great and all, but I'd like to understand when, you know, construction projects or tenant issues really arose, and tell me some situations like that that happened, you know, and how did you solve for that? If I don't hear a good understanding of that, and by the way, the person that actually solved for that, right? So is your asset manager on the line who could help explain what we did in that situation, you know, the person who's actually solving for it, I want to understand their perspective on that. So those are some of the things I asked for.
Okay. Yeah. I love it. I think that's a huge due diligence step, and something, especially a lot of newer investors, they just don't know to ask. A lot of times, you know, and I think this is a big thing on social media too, is people oversimplify the business a lot. They'll say, you know, buy this property, the manager does everything, and you get this mailbox money. And, you know, to an extent you can get away with that. But when you're running a real business and you have 1,000 doors, you have 200 unit apartment buildings, that you cannot do that. Some people think that's the whole game. And that's because that's what people are posting on social media to glorify this. But no, you got to work the deals. You got to work them very hard.
Yeah. And you're saying no as a passive investor. You're probably saying no to 80% of the deals you get presented. You know, that's what I do anyways. And it's important to do the vetting. It's important. And then, you know, your passive income stream is something, it doesn't just, to your point, it's not just mailbox money. You want to hope that's the case, but it's not, right? Because the day that you take your eye off the ball and you haven't vetted something properly is the day you get a capital call, right? Mm-hmm. And somebody's saying, hey, I need more money to get the deal, to keep the deal alive, right? And so that's what you don't want to do. And so be conservative in how you approach that, protects your wealth and your income stream.
Yeah, I love that. So Ronnie, I mean, this has been a phenomenal conversation. I think anybody who's listening is interested in placing LP cash and replacing their income, right? I mean, those are the magic words, replace my income with it. It could get a ton of value out of this episode. So thanks so much for coming on and sharing your insights with us.
Sounds good. Thanks, Justin, for having me.
Well, that's it for today's show. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. And if you're looking to learn more about passive real estate investments, make sure you head to our show notes and download our free ebook, The Definitive Guide to Passive Real Estate Strategies, where we reveal the ins and outs of the truly passive ways to invest in real estate. We'll see you on the next episode.